Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, May 12th. I'm Ray Graff. It's time once again to talk car maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke from Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. If you have a question about your car or truck, maybe something's askew, maybe your check engine light's on, give us a shout. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org for the email. The number is 800-348-2551. Cars, trucks, expensive things that maybe aren't so bad. We'll find out. Gordon Fricke's here. Your call's coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program today to answer your automotive conundrums is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. He knows a lot about cars. Give him a try. And if you have a question, feel free. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org for the emails, or 800-348-2551 for the phones. Gordon Fricke, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
What's happening with you? What'd you drive down today?
An Audi Allroad.
I don't think I've ever seen one of those.
Might be the third generation of that car. Yeah, it's like a sport wagon, kind of on minor steroids. The first gen had air suspension, so you could lower it and raise it.
I had one.
Actually, I still do. It's smashed up in my backyard.
Hey, what'd you do?
Hit a deer.
Ouch.
Couldn't part with the car. It's still sitting there in 1,000 pieces.
Oh, boy.
But, yeah, cool car. And they've gotten less unreliable, more conventional suspensions and things like that.
I personally love those air suspensions where they go up and down.
Oh, they're great until you have to pay to fix them.
Really?
Or suffer through the repair. Yeah.
Now, my old long-gone 89 DeVille would go up and down. Like when my brother, he was a big guy, he got in the passenger seat. And I didn't even know it. I had it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden,
the car would...
he would get in and the thing would lift up. I don't know if that was air suspension
or
not.
Yeah, sure it was, yeah.
Amazing.
The GMs of that era, I don't think they had it on all four corners, but a lot of them had it in the rear to take up load. Passengers,
yeah.
Luggage, maybe towing or something like that.
Cool thing. Our guest today is Gordon Fricke. It's Cars, Repair, and Maintenance. 800-348-2551 is the number. Couple emails at voxpop@wamc.org. Jeffrey and Coxsackie wrote in this morning. I have a 2019 Kia Sorento LX, 164,000 miles, most of them highway. Should I be getting my oil changed sooner than every 5,000 miles? Every show.
I know. Well, it's a good question,
yeah,
because
it tends to be
a highly neglected maintenance.
Right.
But to answer the question, 5,000 miles today seems to be a very acceptable interval.
Yeah.
If you talk to Roger back in the day, probably during the brass era cars, it was every 600 miles or every 1,000 miles, but 3,000 miles became a standard for many, many generations. And you had carbureted engines and pretty sloppy engine management systems. So you were, going through spark plugs every year and gasoline was diluting the oil.
Right.
Everything is tighter and much more regulated. Some of the car makers are definitely saying do it every 10,000, which is truly too much, too many miles.
Right.
But I don't think he needs to ramp it up any shorter, but stick with the 5 for sure.
All right, the number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke's our guest today. Let's do another email or two, and then we'll take a break and then hit the phones. Luke in Averill Park writes in, 2014 Mustang water issue. My wife has a 2014, I think, maybe a 2015 convertible Mustang. Water's getting trapped in the back fender rocker panels. You can hear it slosh around after it rains. I cannot see any drain holes from underneath. I did put my pressure washer wand down in the area where the water lies, trying to unclog the drain holes from the inside. Did not help. It just added more water. Any other ideas to help open those drain holes?
Well, it depends on where it's collecting. If it's the where the convertible top kind of meets the body, vehicles do have means of getting rid of that water because convertibles inevitably are going to seep some water in different areas. BMW Z cars have drains that are accessible from under the car, and you can I see a few of those every year, and some of them are definitely getting. I see them plugged up. We clean them out, and there's cowl drains in the front where your windshield wipers are located and where the air comes in for your heater. Same thing, that cowl has to drain out or it floods the car. If it's the quarter panels, there usually are little dimples in where the factory welded the pieces together, and there's generally an opening that acts as a drain.
Mm.
And you could go up in there with a pipe cleaner or a little wire or something and kind of like Roto-Rooter those out. As to the actual drains, I would look online for a diagram or ask where they are because it's very important to keep them clean.
Okay. One more email here, and then we'll jump to a break and then jump to the phones. If you have a car or truck question, now's the time to get in the queue. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. This one from Chris in South Amherst. My wife wants to buy herself a new car. Major birthday gift. That's what he says. She's thinking Honda CR-V hybrid. Question. Which car do we trade, sell to accommodate this? She has a 2010 Lexus RX 350, maybe 120,000 miles. I have a 2013 Honda CR-V 5 with 95,000 miles. Go for a big, heavy car that burns more gas or smaller car with fewer miles that's better on gas. Well, I don't know. I mean, what do you say to Chris on this one?
Well,
it's a matter of opinion.
So you've got two different trades of different values.
Yeah.
Do you want to trade in the car and get the most trade-in value? And that would be the Lexus.
Even though it's a 2010 and the Honda's a 2013?
10 and 3 years difference? You'd have to look it up.
Okay.
Because trends are sometimes... purchasing and value trends don't seem to make sense sometimes. It's what the market wants.
Right.
So, yeah, I guess you'd have to look up both cars.
Okay.
And I don't know. It's a personal thing. What car do you want to get rid of sooner than the other one? They're both great cars. So you're not – it's not like if the choice were of one really good high-quality car and one piece of
– 1987 Yugo.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, then right. That would be an easy answer.
Okay, fair enough. What's a Honda CR-V hybrid? Is that a SUV?
Yeah, you know what a CR-V is, right?
It used to be considered
a small sport utility. They've grown every generation, but I don't know, they're like the size of a Nissan Rogue or a Toyota RAV4. That's the class vehicle this car is.
Does it look somewhat like a 1965 Buick Riviera?
I don't think it looks even remotely like it.
Could you put one of the CRVs in the trunk
yes.
of the Buick
yeah,
Riviera?
And maybe shut the lid.
Ah, man, those were the days. All right, let's take a quick break here, and then we'll hit the phones. Gordon Fricke's our guest. 800-348-2551 is our number. Back in a flash. Yeah, give me the simple life there, a slant six or something. It's cars with Gordon Fricke today, 800-348-2551. That's the number. And let's go to the phones. We'll start in Westfield, Massachusetts. Kit, you're up. Oh, that's a terrible start. You got to turn. Oh, boy. Okay. Oh, boy. Ow. It hurts me. Kit, are you there? Oh, God, that was a terrible call. All right, just a reminder, and no offense to Kit, but if you're going to be on hold, when I go to you, you got to turn the radio down right away or it sounds just terrible. And Kit, please call back. We'll put you back on the air. Let's see if we can do better this time. Valencia is the place. Dennis is the person. Dennis, you're on.
Hello, thank you.
You got
I have an 09 Toyota Tacoma. The tire pressure monitor light is on, but I don't know which tire is needs attention. How do I tell, or do I?
So when you turn the engine, when you turn the key on or start the engine, does the tire pressure monitor light flash and then come on steady?
No, it doesn't flash. No.
So general rule is if the light is not flashing after you start the engine, it is a low tire. So
okay,
your vehicle doesn't tell you which wheel or which tire is in question. So just routinely check them all and bring them up to the sticker, the pressure that's on the door jam sticker. And let's say that sticker on your truck is 30. I always recommend going 2 pounds higher because you're going to lose air over the course of time, and then you're going to be 2 pounds lower. And I don't think your truck has a sensor in the spare, but if you look on that door jam sticker again, that will tell you what all of your tire pressures need to be. And generally, if the spare tire is something like 60 and the tires on your car are like 30 or 32, it's a mini spare and there's no sensor in it. If the spare has the same spec as the rest of the tires, there could be a sensor in it and it needs to be checked and inflated because the spare gets overlooked very often. And RAV4s were famous with that when they had the spare tire on the tailgate. Tire light would be on. People would go out of their minds. I've checked the tire pressures 100 times. The spare's got a sensor in it.
Ah, there you go. Dennis.
Okay. If the tire's on the vehicle, I understand that. There's four tire pressure monitors. I got it up to the right tire pressure. There's none on the spare. Is there an easy way to figure out which one needs it?
Just check the pressures. But if they're all up to the correct pressure, then it requires a special tool to send a signal to the sensor to see if it's alive or not. So at that point, it's got to go to a shop. Yep.
All right, Dennis, thanks a lot. And what a racket that is. Come on. In the old days, your tire looks a little flat. You put some air in it. What is this?
What would Roger think of tire pressure?
I think he'd be disgusted with the state of the drivers today. Everybody should be able to check their tires.
Maybe he would embrace it, say, no, it's a good idea so you don't have flats or soft tires. You never know.
Man, you hearing a rumble? Hearing a rumble?
I do. You asked me earlier.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a little construction. Shelly in Cheshire, Massachusetts. Shelly, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2010 Subaru Outback, and it's garaged old for 6 months during the wintertime, from the fall until beginning of May. Last year, there was a slight leak from the Subaru, and I brought it in, and they said, oh, you just need to change the gasket. So I had an oil change, and they changed the gasket. Well, this year, we brought it out, and it was a very severe oil leak, and they put a quart of oil in. But I'm wondering now, what could it possibly be? It couldn't be a gasket that allows that much oil to leak.
So quite a puddle accumulated over the winter is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that is obviously a static leak, not a running leak. Some cars leak oil when they're being driven, when the engine's running, going down the road, dripping. And then you shut it off, the leak stops, and it drips for a little bit, and then the leak is over.
Right.
So a 10 Outback, I'm pretty sure that has a ferrous oil pan, a steel oil pan. I would take it in and get it on a lift somewhere, you know, if you have a shop that you go to. And if it leaked that much over the winter, I've got a feeling the source of the leak will be fairly easy to see. And it could be a corroded oil pan, which is not really the worst thing in the world on that car. But I would get it checked because, you know, obviously you don't want to get your oil level down too low while driving. Let's say that leak gets worse and you don't know it. Red light comes on.
Right.
You need to stop.
That's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, Shelly.
Right. All right. I'll have that checked. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. So Shelley had a ferrous oil pan, right?
Yeah, steel.
Steel. And, yeah. And are they plastic now?
Yeah, yeah.
Would you, do you prefer that?
You know, we got to go back and ask Roger, because there is so much plastic now.
Yeah.
Intake manifolds, other engine components, valve covers, oil pans. I have encountered some cars with plastic oil pans where the owner hit something, or there was an object in the road and it blows a hole in it immediately and you lose all your oil.
Oh.
If you don't shut the engine off right away, you're done.
Done.
If you had a steel pan, they can take some dents. Maybe I'm dating myself. I don't know. But some cars have aluminum oil pans and they don't like impacts either.
Mm.
So it has to do with weight savings, cost savings, manufacturing ease. A lot of these cars have plastic drain plugs that go in and just turn like a quarter of a turn.
That's terrible. I hate that.
So I always say, what would Roger think? But what would Don think? Because,
oh, is he listening?
Well, I think so.
All right.
So he encountered a plastic oil drain plug in his F-150, and I don't think he was overjoyed with it.
Can you replace it aftermarket with a metal one
that
fits? Well, that's not right. But enough of my complaining. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. And a reminder, folks, when it go to you, turn your radio down as soon as you can. Dave in Richmond, Massachusetts. Dave, you're on. Oh, boy. That's
sounds like the it's the ocean.
Hello, hello, Dave. You're on.
Yes.
Dave, I can't hear you at all, man.
Hello.
Hello. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Well, yes. Go ahead. Go ahead. Boy. Hey, Dave, your connection's bad. I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll try. Okay.
No, what I'm going to do is take care of what I'm doing.
What was that now? What did he say? All right. What did he say? Do we know?
Maybe okay. was it a wrong number?
All right. Well, let's move on then. Thank you.
Better.
For
Better? Can you hear me
oh,
now?
Oh, yes. You didn't swear or anything, did you, Dave?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No, as long as you can hear me.
Yeah, go ahead.
We have a 2014 Cadillac CTS twin turbo V-Sport.
Nice.
Check engine light came on. It had a code P0299 in the history, which is a low boost code. My question is, could a failing wastegate solenoid contribute to that code?
Certainly possible, because the wastegate is controlling the boost pressure. With a scan tool, one with advanced data, a guy with a scan tool, you can go into the data and watch the boost, and you'll see the requested boost by the computer, and you'll see the actual boost. And
okay.
if that boost is never hitting the mark, or if it doesn't hit it often enough, it'll turn that light on. What did the code say? Was it just boost, or was it high? Did it say high boost or low boost?
It was low boost.
Yeah.
Low boost.
Yeah. If the solenoid was failing electrically, you might get a code for the circuit. But if it's just a general low boost code, it takes some sorting out, and you got two turbos and the whole deal.
So the boost is for the turbos.
Yeah, the turbochargers are pumping up the air that goes into the engine. So it's at pressure now.
Yep.
Wow, that is a sweet car, Dave.
It's
420 horsepower out of that thing.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep. It's only got 60,000 miles on it. It's still brand new.
And I bet you don't even notice that the boost is low. It might even be a false reading,
No.
It could be a sensor issue,
Yeah, we cleared it and hasn't come back yet.
Oh.
So, but I was the choice is a wastegate solenoid, which I already have, knowing that it was getting weak, or the potential of a turbo. And I'd much rather think that the wastegate solenoid would contribute.
Yes.
So
yeah, there anything that has control over the boost is suspicious in a car like that. Even
okay.
You know, It probably doesn't have any air leaks, but you know they always want you to make sure that all the air connections after the turbo to the intake are perfect. And once in a while, you will find that there's a loose connection or a fitting popped out, and you're losing boost air. You know.
Okay.
So that's all a right. V6,
right? Well, I've
got
a couple of rain days coming up, so I can do something and
cool.
Pull it apart and check it.
Dave, that's a V6 twin turbo? Dave?
Yes, it is.
Oh, that's
3.6.
Oh, that's a car.
Twin turbo.
420 horsepower.
Oh, it's...
Well, Ray, didn't you want to turbocharge your current Cadillac?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Yes, I do. Do you like the turbo, Dave?
Love it.
Okay, man. Thanks for the call. 800-3, that's a sweet car. 800-348-2551 is the number. Robert's in Hobart, the book capital of the Catskills. Robert, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
It's the book village of the Catskills.
Right. Okay. It's a book capital, right? That's what it says here on my screen. Anyway, we digress.
Anyway,
go ahead.
I have a question about the safety of driving. I've given up driving recently because I have Parkinson's disease. I'm wondering if a self-driving car would be an option for me.
Well, they're not authorized or legal.
They're not street legal in New York yet?
No.
Okay.
No. The answer to that question would be yes, that would be really great because you could remain mobile. I don't know if that's considered level four, but I don't even know if Arizona, which is a big test state for autonomous driving, and probably California, but I think it's going to be a while.
Really? Well, maybe he can sign up to be one of the testers?
Take a trip to...
only Arizona?
Well, I have a friend in Arizona.
I don't want to move to Arizona.
Yeah,
burning up.
I've been to Arizona during in the wintertime to go to the Barrett Jackson auction, and they were testing Waymo and a bunch of those self-driving cars with monitors in them because this is, 6-8 years ago.
Right.
So they've been doing it. And I think they've got them going now, but I'm not sure to what level.
All right, Robert, thanks for the call. I got to say, the first time I get in one of those, and I'm sure it'll happen if I live long enough, I'm going to be a little scared.
Well, of course.
The statistics are pretty good on these self-driving cars.
Didn't Schwarzenegger go in one of those movies, Total Recall?
Don't know. Never saw any of those.
Yeah, and the driver was just a drone. It wasn't a real driver, and Arnold got mad and ripped the guy out of the floor. No? I guess we're getting off the subject.
Well, of course he did. Let's see. Maybe there's a caller. Oh, Steve is in Glens Falls. Steve, you're on. Wow. I tell you what. I better not play the numbers today. Steve, go ahead.
Hi, yes. Gloucester. And kind of a simple problem. I just need to replace the bulb in the driver's side rear directional. And there are two bolts to remove the casing. And I removed those. And for the life of me, I cannot get the casing out. Do you have any suggestions or anything that I'm missing?
Well, you dropped out when you said the year and model of your car. So say it one more time for us.
Oh, it's a 2015 Hyundai Veloster.
Okay.
A Velociraptor.
It's not a Velociraptor.
Oh, that's a different thing. Okay.
Wow.
So I'm not sure on that exact car, but a lot of cars that have bolts or screws, two of them, the other end of the taillight usually has a couple of devices that plug into like these rubber grommets. So the lamp has got to be kind of wiggled out of there without you breaking it. And I have taken lamps out of cars to the point where I'm saying it's going to break, but you got to get it out to change the bulb. But I think if you maybe YouTube that, you'd see what guys are doing. But I think you've got to get on that lens and pull it probably straight back to release these two little pins that go into these rubber grommets. That's what I think you're up against.
Okay, so straight back as opposed to out.
I think so. In other words, in the same direction that your screws went in, I think those pins are going to be you know, parallel to those. So don't try to pull it out sideways. I think it's going to just come straight back.
But again, looking on YouTube couldn't hurt.
Oh, no. I think you guys would be happy to show you how to do it there.
All right, Steve. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Number here is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest today. It's automotive maintenance and repair. And now to Pine Bush and Russ. Go ahead, Russ.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
2003 Toyota Camry, original owner, about 170,000 on the clock, four-cylinder engine. Transmission oil has never been changed. Do I change it or just run it the way it is?
That's always a good question. How many miles again did you say?
About 170K plus. Oil's clean. It smells fine. Shifts normally.
Yep. So that car's got a dipstick still in the transmission?
It does,
yeah.
Yes.
So if you pull that dipstick out and let the fluid go on, have you put the fluid on a white sheet of paper?
Yep.
Okay. It looks pretty good?
Yeah, it looks clean, red, and healthy looking.
That's great. So if it looked horrendous, if it looked like driveway sealer and smelled like varnish, I'd be really careful. But
yeah,
I think you're safe to do a drain and refill. No full flushes.
Right.
I believe that car has a drain plug in the transmission pan. And I think so. And I think you can just drain and refill. Because when you do that, you're not taking the total fluid out. The transmission in that car might hold, I don't know, 12 quarts, let's say, or 13. You're only going to get three or four out. So you're not shocking it. You're freshening up the fluid. And some of the car makers years ago would recommend doing that several times in succession, so you're not shocking the transmission, but you're revitalizing the fluid. So you could, I would do that.
Okay.
Thanks, Russ. Appreciate the call. It's Gordon Fricke Day today in cars and trucks and repairs and maintenance. Let's go to Newburgh and Mike. Mike, you're on.
Hi. I have a 95 Toyota Corolla, 31 years old, but it's in good shape. The problem is I have a exhaust manifold leak that's on the bottom side of the manifold, which is very close to the engine block. I don't want to take that off and put a new gasket on there. It's quite a big job. Have you ever heard of anyone putting a bead of weld up underneath there if they can get there with a stick, with a rod?
You can't because you've got an aluminum cylinder head and a cast iron manifold or a steel manifold.
Okay.
Yep. So you can't do anything about it. You can only live with it or get it fixed. And sometimes on a car,
it's a big job, right?
Well, it can be. Sometimes on a car that age, you stand the chance of broken manifold studs.
And then that's what I'm worried about.
That's like a broken tooth. Now you got the root broken off inside the cylinder head, and you're highly committed at that point, you know? So, yeah,
yes,
I know.
Sorry.
Yep. You get it.
Yep. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it very much. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, let's go to Hoosick Falls, and someone allegedly knows Gordon. It's Kelly. Kelly, go ahead.
Hi, this is Kelly Brown. Hi, Gordon.
Long time no see.
Thank you for taking my call. Long time no see. My car is actually at Gordon's shop.
It is.
Wait a minute. This is going to be free advice, Kelly. So maybe you can knock off a little bit on the bill.
I was going to bring in a little bit of what would Roger think, and I was going to bring in Kelly's car because she's got a little plastic coolant connector that was brittle and that broke this morning.
Oh.
And I...
Easy fix, right?
It is. Thank God it is. It's a $24 part.
Yeah.
And but why do they have to put such flimsy components hanging off of the cooling system that could be a real problem?
To keep you in business, man.
I guess. But anyway, we've gotten off the subject here, Kelly.
Do you have a question?
Well, I'm happy to hear that my car might be ready later today.
Oh, nice.
but I really wanted to talk about the fuel. My car, we have the same model car, and I ran into Gordon some time ago, and I asked him how important is it to put premium fuel? It's rated 91 or above.
Yeah.
And I've been religiously putting that in, and my husband religiously doesn't like to because the cost is rising.
Right.
And we were considering a new vehicle. I just love the Audi, and I want to stick with it. But can I ever get away, or should I just go for the premium? How important is it to the engine to keep it running in good shape?
We talk about this every show.
Yes, and there's a bit of a misconception regarding the octane versus the quality. So your car does ask for 91 on the gas cap, and that's because it's a turbocharged engine, and it requires a little higher octane to perform at its peak of efficiency and to not have detrimental sounds or knocking noises. However, the car has a system that listens for these knocks if the gasoline is not up to the correct octane, and it corrects it. What's important is to use a top tier gasoline in all cars today, really. And there's you can go on the internet and look and find out what stations are using top tier. And I've been meaning to call Stewart's because they're all over the place, and they have 91, and theirs is ethanol free, but I'm not sure if it's a top tier provider.
Right.
But the octane on your car, I always recommend sticking with 91, but if you drop to 89 and it was still a top tier station, because top tier puts the max detergents in every grade they sell, your computer will compensate for it. There's a tiny trade-off that I haven't scientifically proven, but if the engine is running on 91 versus 89, it might be getting slightly better gas mileage on the 91 than it could on the 89.
But you're not sure.
If the computer has to back the engine management down because it says, hey, there's something going on here. We don't have 91. Detune the engine so it doesn't knock.
Uh-huh.
So is that detuned engine, are you going to make up any difference in the gas between 89 and 91?
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know. It's
that's a good debate. Well, that's a debate I can have with my husband. Mileage.
I was leading up to that. You could have that discussion with him. And of course, he's going to know where you got the information.
And Kelly, thanks for the call. We're way overdue for a break. And just it should be noted, this is not an appointment service. And nor is it any marriage counseling. This is Automotive Maintenance and Repair with Gordon Fricke, and we'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Cars and Trucks Today with Gordon Fricke. 800-348-2551 is our number, and the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's see here. Tim writes in, I have a 2017 Tesla Model S with 221,000 miles, and yes, repairing the air suspension is expensive, $15,000 for all four struts at 120,000. Oh boy. Well, that's, you know, Musk can afford it, certainly. Do you think 240,000 is the mileage where these struts will fail?
I don't know if there's so much mileage sensitive. It has to do with how much grit and debris you run over. If the car is driven year-round, the wintertime, the sand and grit and dirt from the road gets in these airbags and beats them up. And I had an air-suspended car. That first all-road had springs on it, air suspension. And whenever I raised the car, I could see all the sand and junk underneath the airbags. The other thing is time.
Right.
And how horrendous the roads are, because they're getting beat up all the time. So time, what year was the car?
2017, so Tesla Model S.
Yeah, so almost 10 years old. I'm thinking a lot of it has to do with conditions.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the second question, I have a carport, says Tim, with a spalling asphalt surface. I don't know what that is, spalling. One wheel leaks air. I think it's due to the lack of level. It's the lowest tire on the asphalt. It always goes to about 35 PSI one time in 2 hours after filling when parked there, but never goes below that. Is this likely due to the level or the age of the tires?
There is leaks can occur at different pressures. You can have a high pressure leak. So you let's say the spec is 38. Pump it up to 38, 39, 40. It's a tiny, tiny leak. Once the pressure gets down to, let's say, 30 or 32, there's not enough push to go past whatever that tiny, tiny leak was, and the car, the tire virtually stops leaking. It's a high-pressure leak. Oh, that's probably what it is.
Carl in Katona writes, ethanol content. Is it true that home generators are not designed to be operated using gasoline that has a high ethanol content, such as 87 rating with 15% ethanol? If so, what grade of gas would be appropriate for generators? Should I avoid any gas that includes ethanol? I have a medium-sized Honda generator I use during power outages. And that's from our buddy Carl in beautiful Katona.
Yes. So any of your small engines, lawnmowers, generators, snowblowers, all that stuff, lawn tractors, if you can get ethanol-free gasoline, that is exactly what should be in those engines. Because the ethanol... they're better now. In the early days, the fuel systems were not ready for the alcohol content, and it would ruin all kinds of stuff. The carburetors, some are plastic, parts of them. The fuel lines didn't like it. Some of the tanks didn't like it. So ethanol-free in all off-road small engines is my recommendation.
It's so pathetic at these prices, but I'm putting premium in my lawnmower. I mean, it's
to get to avoid the ethanol.
Yeah. And boy, I can get that thing going.
Yeah,
fast.
But boy, that's a great doing a good job on the lawn with that premium in there.
Well, not so much. Okay. By the way, getting back to Kelly's question about octane, I seem to recall up in Maine they had I forget which brand, but they had like some kind of nitro high octane stuff. What if you put really super over octane gas in a car? What'll happen?
Nothing, but you won't achieve any benefit.
Really?
No, because the minimum requirement has to be met. If you go over that, the engine doesn't really care.
So if I found like a 105 or something?
Not unless you modified the engine to operate on that 105 with higher compression, more timing, all the performance upgrades.
So it wouldn't matter.
No.
Okay. Paul writes in, I get a smell of rotten eggs after I accelerate. I assume you're talking about a car. I get a smell of rotten eggs after I accelerate. I assume it's in the catalytic. I tried some Cat Clean, and the smell's still there. There's no check engine light. Does it make sense to try some other catalytic converter cleaner?
Well, that smell is sulfur dioxide, which is a byproduct, and it's not an uncommon smell. We've all probably been on the interstate or a highway where there's a long, long, long hill, and there's cars passing each other, and you all of a sudden say, what is that smell?
Yeah.
Well, it's the sulfur smell coming out of the tailpipes. Some gasolines have higher sulfur content than others, and some cars and their emission systems are way more sensitive to it. Way, way back in the 80s, I worked at a Volkswagen Porsche Audi dealership, and there was recommendations at that time to avoid certain brands of gas because of the sulfur.
Oh.
I don't know if you can look that up and see, but you might be able to.
You think it's still a thing now?
The emission systems are doing a better job now, but if this caller or emailer is getting that smell, may not hurt to see if there's any evidence or information on what gases have the least.
Now, getting back to the catalytic converter cleaner, is that wise for everybody to do that once in a while?
Yeah, sure it is. Yep. It cleans your fuel injectors. If you have an older style injection system, it'll clean your intake valves, piston tops, and the catalytic cleaners advertise to clean oxygen sensors of debris and deposits and the honeycomb and the catalytic converter.
Mercy.
So, yes, anyway.
Okay, and that goes right in the gas tank? You do it at fill-up?
Yep, put a bottle in, fill your tank, drive that tank close to empty.
Okay, one more email here, and then we'll get back to the phones with Gordon Fricke. Peter writes in, without a detailed inspection, any general advice on identifying car road noises to distinguish a bad tire from a bad wheel bearing from a faulty transmission, etc.?
trained ear, because tire noise is super common, because as tires wear, they don't wear perfectly flat, and the treads start to get a little choppy.
Yeah.
And they will mimic wheel bearing noises, and or failing wheel bearers will mimic tire noises, rotational sounds. Trained ear, guy goes, you know, mechanic goes out in the car, listens to it, says, I don't know, I think it's tire, not wheel bearing. You have to bring it in and then do a scope test and spin the wheel or drive the wheel on a lift so the car's off the ground and you're turning the wheels. And then you put a scope around the hub and listen. If they're really, really silent but the tire looks choppy, it's going to be tire noise.
All right, I'm going to give you a great idea. Or anybody who wants to try this, go ahead. And usually my great ideas have already been done. So here's the idea. You know how there's this app called Merlin, and you hold it up to, when you hear birds singing, it tells you what the birds are?
Yes.
You would hold this app up, your phone up, to the engine, or when it's rolling, and it would be able to diagnose what the sound is.
That is a really great idea.
It's already been done, huh?
I don't know. Shazam?
For cars.
But that's music, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, somebody out there, you want to make a little money, go ahead. And I tell you what, if you do, put some money in the lockbox. WAMC Fund Drive is coming up in June, and we can use all the help we can get. Anything in the lockbox now at WAMC.org counts on day one of the drive. We'll need you if we're going to keep going. Paul is in Altamont. Paul, go ahead.
Hey, Gordon and Ray. Got a 2012 Kia Optima SX. 151,000 miles, but it's only got a one-year-old engine. That's another story. We'll save for another day, unless we want to get into it. But in any case, since we put the engine in, we got it back from Kia. It was at no cost to me, by the way. The turbo wastegate actuator only works intermittently. They diagnosed it, and I gave them a good car with that when they replaced the engine. And I got one back with a new engine, but the wastegate actuator didn't work. And they say it's unrelated. But now that we're going to sell it, because I took advantage of the Biden tax credit for used EV cars last September.
Okay.
I got a Mustang, a four-year-old Mustang, and I love it. But I don't need this car now. And now that the winter's over, I want to sell it, and suddenly I'm getting ghosts. The brake lights are on, and they remain on. I can tap them, and they'll shut off, and then they'll come back on to the point where it'll kill the battery. So the car's off, the brake lights want to remain on. I also, at the same time, simultaneously got a dash light for traction control that popped on. So it's starting to get ghost right when I want to sell it, of course.
Yeah.
And ghost's been awesome mechanically.
It knows now, you want it. You want to leave it, and it's giving you a hard time.
Sure it is.
I think so. So any ideas about – it's going into the shop this week.
Yep.
But any ideas before it goes in on how I can get that – what might be causing that brake light to want to – stay on?
Yeah, it's more than likely the brake light switch. There's a switch down by the pedal that senses how far the pedal's being pushed, turns on the brake lights, and that also sends a signal to the computer indicating that you're going to be or around the brakes, and that also can be affecting the traction or the ABS system if you're getting mixed signals. If you're accelerating, but the brake lights are on, the computer gets confused, like, what's going on here? So I would be suspicious of a brake light switch that may solve those two problems. It's not going to take care of the wastegate problem, though. And when Kia changed your engine, you just got the engine. You didn't get the manifolds and the turbocharger and all the electronics and all the intake stuff. So that probably came with... whether it was on your old engine or not, but that's all the stuff that stayed with the car.
All right.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Thanks. Thanks for that brake light switch down by the pedal.
Yeah, could be it.
Could be.
All right, Paul. Thanks a lot for the call. By the way, Scott wrote in, using a Merlin app for odd car sounds. Very clever, Scott. It only works on Thunderbirds. You see what he did
that
there?
That is excellent.
All right, let's go to Syracuse. Cindy, you're on.
Hello. I bought a 2018 Toyota 4Runner used. It has 73,000 miles on it. And after all the papers were signed, I got given the certified pre-owned checklist. And one of the things on there said that the transmission wasn't shifting correctly. So the first thing I did, I had all the fluids changed on it as soon as I bought it. And they told me that the transmission fluid was black. Mm. So I've driven this vehicle for like 30,000 miles now since then. And the only thing I've really noticed, and I've got going with it pretty good, just to see how it's going to shift. And the only thing I really notice is when I'm up high, like around 70 or 80 miles an hour, it'll stay on 3,000 RPMs, and sometimes it won't. Sometimes it will. And so that's the only thing I've noticed. If it's having any trouble shifting down, it's at that high speed. And so I guess my question is should I be concerned that at some point I'm going to have more of a transmission problem? I mean, or maybe when that new fluid went in there, it saved itself somehow, or should I be expecting a problem down the road?
Okay. How many miles are on it?
So now it's got 103,000 now on it, 30,000 more than when I first got it.
Okay. Yep.
So the tach staying at 3,000 RPM at how fast? 90, did you say?
No, about between 70 and 80.
Ah.
But will it sometimes go lower than that? At the same speed?
Sometimes it will kick down from the 3,000, and sometimes it won't, yes. Yeah.
So these transmissions today all have what are called lockup converters, and it's possible that it occasionally is not locking down at the last gear at the highest speed. However, you would almost always get a check engine light because the transmission computer reports to the engine, and if there was a problem, it would maybe turn that check engine light on. Any lights like that on?
No lights at all.
How does the fluid look now after 30,000?
Well, I'm getting ready to go in and have it done again.
Yeah.
With it being black, though, at 73,000, does that mean there was some sort of a problem with the transmission? Or?
Well, so the clutch materials contaminate the fluid. So as they wear, those particles end up in the fluid, and the fluid gets darker and darker and darker. And that's why you periodically want to change that fluid to get the contaminants and the debris out. If it was really, really super dark, if that fluid was black, that's a lot of debris. And I would, when you take it in, get the shop's opinion. They're going to, I don't know if that has a dipstick, though. I don't think it does for the transmission. But you might want to say, hey, before we do the transmission, can you take a little come out and advise me at this point what to do with this fluid? Because there is truth to fluid changes bringing about a problem. So I just, at this point, if you're having a little shifting issue, you probably need a fluid change, but just be careful with it.
Okay, we're out of time, Cindy. How many speeding tickets do you have, Cindy?
Thank you.
How many speeding tickets do you have? How many speeding tickets do you have?
Believe it or not, listen to this. I was up in the Adirondacks camping doing one of my 70 to 80 mile an hour checks.
Yeah.
And I got pulled over, and he asked me what I thought I was doing. And when I told him I just wanted to see if the transmission was going to kick down, he I don't think he ever heard that one before because he just laughed and he let me go.
All right, I'm going to have to let you go, too. Thank you for the call. Gordon Fricke, thanks, man.
I'm using that the next time I get pulled over.
We'll see if it works the second time. Hey, man, so we'll see you, next month,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
Support comes from Windy Hill Farm Nursery, Orchard, and Garden Shop, Great Barrington, offering hardy shrub roses, crab apples, dogwoods, red buds, viburnums, and other spring bloomers for the month of May. WindyHillFarmInc.com. Rosebud. Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care for seniors, offering them opportunities to live at age gracefully with dignity and respect. DaughtersofSarah.org. And Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the Greater Capital District for over 45 years. AmbroseLEC.com. Oh, it's always a struggle. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.